All right. Oh. Then I discovered I got some air in my hi-hat. I kind of like that sound. Whoa! The first time that happened to me, it was an accident. 16th notes. Ooh, I liked it. So I started to do a lot more. Now I started to add the backbeat. But I still had to remember that the stick had to do the rebound. Oh, yes. Whoa. I like it very much.
All right, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. This is episode 50 of the podcast, and to mark the occasion, I have a very special guest on the show, Bernard Purdy. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that Bernard is one of the greatest drummers ever. You know, he's played drums with so many legends, from Aretha Franklin to Nina Simone, James Brown, Frank Sinatra, Miles Davis, Herbie Hancock. I could go on for a while. You know, the list is ridiculous. But for the purposes of this podcast, you know, given the limited time we had to talk, we mostly covered his collaborations with Steely Dan and working with Donald and Walter. You know, I wanted to really hone in on that. Purdy drummed on most of the songs on The Royal Scam, a couple on Asia, Deacon Blues and Home at Last, and of course one song on Gaucho, his iconic Purdy Shuffle, such a defining feature of Babylon Sisters. You know, it kicks off the album, and that was the song that really got me to take more serious notice of Steely Dan to begin with, so it was just a tremendous honor to get the chance to talk to Bernard. I mean, I've just loved this man for years. You know, he comes up on this podcast all the time, and I actually had to mute myself a couple times because I was chuckling so hard over what Bernard was saying. So anyway, he's a true legend, and getting the chance to meet him remotely was a real treat. So here you go. Without further ado, this is my conversation with Bernard Pretty Purdy. Enjoy.
I happen to be working with different people that knew them, and I was moving and doing things for the different companies, which the company at the time was Warner Brothers. And I was doing that not only in New York, but in California as well.
Right.
And Steely Dan was one of the groups that I was making the records for. So whatever needed to be done, yeah, it was a job. And that was my job. That's how I got to know every genre of music, because I did it for Broadway. I did it for concerts. I did it for country. I did it for R&B. I did it for every genre of music. So it was just a matter of, okay, that's where we're going. Let's go.
Yep. You were very professional. You were whoever, you know, brought you in, you were going to be able to play what they asked you to play, no matter what.
No matter what.
What was your first impression of Donald and Walter?
Oh, I listened to what they were asking for. And right after that, I'd sit down and play it. It was that simple to me.
Yeah.
But I understand that it's not a simple thing when people are asking you to do something. It's just that I'm one of the few people I know that so many different artists and arrangers and copyists and all, they knew what I could do because by 61, 62, and 63, I was running around looking for work, being able to make demos. I made more demos than anybody at that time for the first 3 years of the 60s. So I didn't have a problem with anything that Steely Dan asked me for.
Did you think they were demanding or no?
Of course they were demanding.
Yeah.
I had no problem with that. But like I said, I know my job and my position. I knew what I was doing because I had been doing demos for so many different people. They were not just the only ones who did and wanted demos and wanted records done. I had done demos for, 40, 50, 60 people, at least.
And the highest
But
caliber. I mean, Aretha Franklin and
yes,
James Brown, the most demanding and.
it didn't matter who the artist was, they were all demanding because they know what they were looking for. Most of them. Most. I can't say that everybody did, but these were writers. These were people who actually were writing the song. So they wanted a certain thing in their song. So they would talk to me and ask me about this kind of feel, well, another feel. It didn't matter, was it blues, R&B, was it pop, was it country? It's whatever it took to actually make the conversation go down to make these demos.
Right.
So most of them were just demos.
As a professional, you wanted to meet the artist halfway. You know, whatever they were looking for, you were going to give it to them, no matter what it was.
Exactly. That was the best way to say it. And that's exactly what I did. And they understood
Yeah.
after they heard what they heard, what they needed, and said, wow, yes, that's it. That's good. That's good. So what do? You just do it. You do what is necessary because I would ask them the questions of what they're looking for and just go and do it.
So
It
you would
was that
actually
simple.
challenge them, you know, what are you looking for? You know, what do you want?
It's not what people are thinking, but when you're challenging somebody, if you ask me the question, what would you like to put down? What would you want to put down on here that if you don't know what you want to tell me or exactly what you want somebody to do, well, what would you like? My questions never came that way. They talk, I listen, then I tell them what I think things should be.
Yeah.
And right after that, if they don't understand what I'm trying to say, then I play it.
Okay.
It was that simple.
There was a documentary about the making of Steely Dan's Asia. And in the documentary, Walter said something interesting about you. He said that you were always able to come up with something that the listener would never expect. And also play something that no one else could play. Do you agree with that?
1,000%. It's not about competition out here.
Right.
It's not. When you talk to somebody and you try to get everything that you want, that you are being asked to do, you ask the right questions. And that's how you get right to the nitty-gritty immediately. Most people never understood how you're looking at something. It's a demo. It's a demo. It's always a demo first.
Right. And from my understanding, Steely Dan usually started with the drums. So you were kind of, they were starting with you, really, the tracks, right? In terms of a recording. Do you
Well,
remember?
most of the time, but
Yeah.
they had piano player, which was Paul Griffin.
Right.
They had bass player. They had guitar player. But then they sit down and let them play if that's what they wanted to do. And bam, we knock out a song. But see, what they didn't tell me was, especially in the beginning, that they had pre-recorded a lot of these songs. So the biggest thing for me was just tell me what you want. And if you got something that you want me to hear, I'll listen to it. And one thing led to another as time went on, because I did everything that they asked for almost immediately. And then I find out that they had already pre-recorded the songs with two, three, four other people maybe.
Yeah.
But that's not my thing. Wasn't, it didn't matter to me who they had or what they were doing. If you tell me what you want, then I can get down to the nitty-gritty and tell you what I think it should be.
Right. So you weren't distracted by the fact that maybe they were going to record the same song with another band or another drummer. You were just focused
Never.
on doing your thing, play the song that how you wanted to
That's
play it, and nothing else.
exactly right. You're exactly 100% right.
Okay. Did you enjoy working with them in general?
Yes, because the thing is that what I did seemed to be what they were looking for. Even though they had pre-recorded, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I had no idea that they had pre-recorded these songs with different people. I didn't find that out until, oh, I don't know, months. Months in advance, 6 months or a year. How often they had been recording different stuff and had tried different people. They tried different drummers. They tried different guitar players. They tried different bass players. But the person that they had the most was always there, which was Paul Griffin, the keyboardist, and Chuck Rainey, the bass player. So I got a little inside information that was given to me just the conversation. And then I started, oh, so this is how They were. This
Yeah.
is how, okay. So it didn't bother me to make up and say, well, I think that it should be this, should be that, and whatever.
Right.
Until finally, practically every time that I made a suggestion for something, they said, well, what does that mean? What was that you're talking about? I said, well, why don't you listen? You'll hear exactly what you're asking me to do. And every time, just about every time,
So they
they
didn't
used
actually push back on what you played or re-record your parts. Usually you gave them what they wanted to hear, and then
I
that ended
gave
up on
them
the
what they
record.
wanted, I would say 90% of the time.
Yeah. That's what I've heard too, and that's not true for a lot of musicians. So that's, really
No, it's
cool.
not.
You hear the
Oh,
stories,
you hear,
yeah.
and the thing is that, and the reason why you know that you're here is that you get called back. You get called back at different times.
Right.
And then, you kind of know what's going on and such and such. But these guys, they had their own thing that they were looking for. And it just so happens that 80 to 90% of the time, I gave them what they asked for.
No, it's true. It's true.
It worked.
Yeah, it really did. Can you think of anything else that was kind of unique or particular about Donald and Walter, the way they worked, or what you remember about them that was different from other people you worked with?
Well, a lot of things were different. Okay, when you're coming down to the nitty-gritty of working with somebody, everybody that the demos that were being done or the music that was being done, there was always flashbacks. Something they picked up, they heard, they liked, but they didn't say anything in the beginning. They were trying things. They always tried something. Now, I'll give you one major thing. They would ask me about what I think that it should be. And then I said, okay, why don't you tell me what you don't want? So I asked them what they were not looking for. And one of the things that they said, well, we want to get your opinion. And then I said, okay. One of the things is, I think you should have the Purdy Shuffle. No. We don't want to shuffle. We don't want this and we don't want that and such and such and such. So that lasted for about a minute or two. And then I said to them, I said, well, you haven't heard it. So why don't you listen to what it is?
Because
I
they had
feel.
this idea of what a shuffle is, but they hadn't heard your shuffle, the Purdy shuffle.
No, they hadn't. Because no one at that time could do it. And the whole idea what the Purdy Shuffle was about is something that I created, period. No, they didn't want to shuffle. That's what they said. They didn't want so. But it didn't matter. The word shuffle is what they did not want because it was not where they wanted to go. To them, the shuffle was something that the old folks
Right.
did.
It was like old fashioned or kind of archaic.
Thank you.
They
Thank
needed
you.
you to put the modern spin on the shuffle.
But they didn't know what it was.
Yeah,
It was that simple. They did not know what it was.
But you
but
knew
the
that it
word
was going to
stumble.
work for the song. You had conviction.
Yes. All I had to do was to listen to what was going on and making sure that I can change the guitar, the keyboard, and the bass, and bring it in to what I considered the Purdy Shuffle. Now, it was easy for me to do that, but to explain it to people was the hardest part of the job. So, and I told them, and, you know, after they said what they said, I said, why don't you give it a listen before you keep saying that you don't want the shuffle? Since you don't know what the Purdy Shuffle is, why don't you give a listen? And they looked at each other and says, okay. So I didn't have to explain everything to them until they heard it. And as soon as they heard it, yeah, that's what we want. That's what we need. That's it. I know that because what I was, the questions that I was asking them was to find out what they were looking for. So I also assume that I can get this because I know what the bass player can do, I know what the keyboards can do, and I know what the guitar players can do. They can follow me.
Did they make you do a lot of takes over and over again? Because you hear the stories about, did they?
Oh, always.
They did?
Yes.
And you didn't
and
mind?
Then, huh?
Did you mind doing that?
No, I didn't mind. if this is what you're looking for, and that you hear it, and if you don't hear it, and you're not happy with it, then you're going to tell us, no, I don't particularly like this or whatever. Very, very, very seldom did that come out of their mouth.
Yep.
They liked what I suggested, and they liked what I was doing, especially when they liked what the piano was already doing and what the bass player was doing. I joined them and brought us together. I brought them into it. And this is why half the time the guitars would be the last one to put something on.
Right.
And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked for everybody. So the beauty for me was I got what I wanted, what I needed, and they got what they wanted and what they needed. So I kept working all the time.
Yeah. Did you like their music? I mean, what did you think of it?
I love their music. I love their music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like what they were doing.
You did.
And people said, well, man, don't you get tired of what? They paid me good money.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And no ifs, ands, or things about it. They paid me good money. Sometimes we end up doing something and you end up doing it for a few days,
yeah,
or a week or something, and Hey, it's okay. I'm being paid for each day, each time, all the time, the hours. The money was still the same.
Right. So you respected their creative vision, so you were willing to, try and work with them as much as you can, and as long as they were paying you well, you were totally fine with it.
I'm totally fine.
Yeah. Did they ever ask you to tour with them? No, right?
Yes, they did.
They did.
Yes. First thing that came out of my mouth is that, no, I can't do that. I can't do that because I'm not going to play the exact thing that I played on the records. I cannot promise you that I can do that.
That's
So
not your
I'm not going
style.
to. It's not my thing. Sure, I understand that, you get something, you do the job and you copy yourself and just every time. If I got what I wanted, what I needed, and showed, it was usually anywhere from the first, second, and third take. We have done as many as 40 and 50 takes. But I let them know, never bothered me to say that you already have it and take one, two, and three. Didn't bother me at all to say that. And I said, if you do as many takes as you want. I do not argue with folks that want to try something else and do it. Their money. It's their money. And if they want to fool around with it and just that and the other. And that's why the guy who's in charge is the producer. Finally, sure, they end up going back and they go back and they listen because I would tell them, you have what you needed on the first, second, or third take. I know what that is, exactly what that is. This is the kind of thing that you asked for, and this is what I told you that should be for doing it. No problem. They go back and they listen 10, 15, 20 times or whatever, and it was always the first, second, and third take.
Were you ever frustrated because they didn't use the take that you thought you played it the best? They went with something else or
No, sir.
didn't bother you?
Didn't bother me at all because I already said what I had to say at the first, second, or third take. Or if it came down to a take 10 or 15, then I'd say something. But it's their choice. It's not mine. I gave them what I felt was the best take. They can make the decision if that's what they want to keep. Because all we could do was sit and wait for them to listen and listen and listen, go back and play it over and over. And if they got exactly what they wanted, hey, it's fine. The Purdy Shuffle is on hundreds of records. Hundreds of records. Because that's what people all of a sudden seem to like. And
Got
I never saw, I didn't have to say anything. I'll just go ahead and do it. And bam!
it.
The Purdy Shuffle hits again. It took people years to really honestly learn what the Purdy Shuffle was about.
Really, it
And
took people
everybody just
years.
couldn't do it. They didn't want to do it.
Right. Did it
They didn't
bother you
want
when
to do it.
people started playing it? They were basically just ripping you off.
No, I didn't look at anybody ripping me off because I know what I'm going to do and I know what I can do. That's the difference.
Yeah.
That is the difference.
Because it's
I
never going to be
do.
the same as when you play it, also.
Yeah, because I know exactly what I want to play and how I play it and how I make it work. What people do not understand is that when it comes down to what it is, it's not fast. And it's not necessarily super slow. You got to put it where it's in between, where the feel happens, and having a positive attitude about what you're doing and making it all work. And you just pull it together.
How did you come up with the Pardes Shuffle? How did you think of it? Where does that come
Well,
from?
I had been doing it for many, many years because I learned about it listening to the trains.
Really, from the trains, that's where you kind of that was the
Yes.
inspiration.
That's where it came from.
Wow.
Yes.
And then you somehow thought to translate that into a rhythm.
Well, the trains stopped in Elkton, Maryland. It was a major, major train stop. Baltimore, what's the B&O
Okay.
Railroad.
Yeah.
But Elkton was a train stop. It was a major stop, just like Wilmington, different towns and different cities. The train, when you come in with the train, you got to slow down. You have to slow down for the train to stop. You can't keep everything going, and when you want to get close to the area, you got to slow down or you won't be able to stop. That's where in between is where all of that work came together when you give it what you need. And the hardest part of the job is it's a two-bar phrase. It's a two-bar phrase. You put your backbeat on beat three of each bar. So you have that, but then you have things that you can pull together and give this locomotion and have that. That's that little extra stuff. That's that undercurrent. That little undercurrent is what most people overplay. I
Yeah.
got my halftime in, and everything was where I needed it to be. And that's what comes out. It is not, I'm not up here playing the shuffle, hoom-ka-chank, 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 out of the question. And it was not straight time. It was not any of those. And you turn around for the third thing that would happen. Triplet, no, it's a mixture. It's all a mixture. And that's where all of the things that I have done for so long, for so many years, it is a mixture when you put it together.
But how do you know what to play? I mean, where does that come from?
It comes from learning your craft. Learning my craft was the easiest part in the world for me because of my teachers. All the different teachers that I had kept me focused. It didn't matter what the music was because I played every genre of music. I do the same thing of I'm playing country music. It doesn't matter. You play what is necessary for the feel and the positive attitude of who you're working with.
Why do you think you work so well with Chuck Rainey?
Because he gave me what I needed.
Yeah.
He helped me. He supported me. And I supported him. And that's what music is all about. Supporting one another.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to do that, don't do the job. You know, stop being, the wrong words will come out.
Stop being a prima donna.
Prima donna is, they can take that and shove it wherever they want. I don't care.
Okay.
I am not, and I never have been, what they, I'm not a prima donna.
Yeah.
I just know what I do and what I do well. I give people what they ask for, and I try my best to keep it that way and keep it focused. That's all my life. I like who I am and what I'm about, and I've always tried to give everybody what they ask for. And when they did not know what they wanted, I suggest something. And it's right. Always worked.
Yeah.
Yes.
That worked well with Donald and Walter, because I feel like they didn't always know what they wanted.
That's right.
But they had trust in their musicians that, you know, they liked what you had done. They trusted you. Mm-hmm. They knew that you would be able to figure it out. It was almost like it was kind of a challenge to you, because they didn't tell you exactly what they want. They told you what they didn't want. But you came back with them with this thing that they didn't even know they wanted until you played it.
Exactly. It's a job. You commit yourself to a job, and that's what you do. That's what you do. I like to make people dance. And it doesn't matter whether they're dancing fast or slow or anything. I like to make people dance. And that is where and why everything that I've ever done, that's what I look for first. That's what I go for, the feeling first. I understand that what people do when they dance, they give me what I need. What I need. And the happiest thing in the world.
So that's what drives you, is getting people to move. You playing, yes. And then you see the result of that when people are tapping exactly. their toes, or they're, you know, shaking
exactly.
their butt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's isolate Bernard for a second, because just listening to that beat. Bernard, you know, this isn't easy.
You'd come in with a tune and have sort of something in mind, but the way Bernard played stuff was always, he always had some unique stylistic thing that he did that you would never imagine in advance, and that nobody else would do. This tune was good example of that. A lot of Bernard's hi-hat and this tune particularly is a real driving kind of.
You got the backbeat, you got double time, and you have it almost shuffle. Ooh, bee, rap, back up a book at the book, da 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 da. Ooh, ah, ooh, 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 ah.
Bernard, you know, there's the famous story where he would come to a session, in the early '60s, and he'd have two signs with him, and he'd set up these signs. One on one side of the drums would say, "You done it," and then the sign on the other side would say, "You done hired the hit maker, Bernard Pretty Purdy."